To commence. And good morning, North State. You're listening to Free Fire Radio, and I'm Bad Bob. Well, Carl and Linda Bott are not here today. In fact, Lieutenant Colonel Carl Bott, USMC retired, is currently in Sacramento and being honored as the North State Veteran of the Year. And we're very, very happy and proud of that announcement. But in the meantime, we have a special guest host, and it is my pleasure to introduce to you here on KCNR Free Fire Radio, Doug LaMalfa, a gentleman I have met several years ago and has been a pleasure to follow his career in politics. He's a well-known local farmer, and without further ado, here is Doug LaMalfa. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, Bob. How you doing?
Excellent. What a beautiful day. The heat hammer has not dropped, and I'm appreciating that.
Not quite yet, though. Us in the rice and farming business, we have been looking forward to this heat finally from what seemed like kind of a confused spring. But, you know, the lake filled up to within a foot and a half, and so that's good for everybody. So, you know, we can always talk about how dealing with nature versus dealing with government is a heck of a lot easier for farming in most cases. So I'm excited to be on the show, and indeed it's a neat honor for Carl to be receiving down there in Sacramento with the Veteran of the Year. That's a really great ceremony or institution that was put in place just a few years ago. Actually, during my final year in the Assembly, 2008, if I'm recalling correctly, that was the first year that was being done on legislators were recognizing a local from their district Veteran of the Year. And so remember my first designee was Mr. Fred Salante there, who was so involved with that Missing in America project.
Excellent, gentlemen. I'll mention, of course, that our phone lines are always open, 605-4567, streaming on the web at kcnr1460.com.
Well, we will look forward to your calls, so call in with us today. Here we have several guests coming up that should be various different topics of interest to you. And so we'll await them to call in a little bit later. But look forward to your thoughts and ideas and questions as well. So, you know, many of you know me, some of you don't. Again, Doug LaMalfa here. I was privileged to be able to represent you in the California State Assembly here in the 2nd District for 6 years from 2002. To 2008, and that time did fly by very quickly for me, and I hope you folks felt good about my representation that time too. Evidently it went pretty well, because I decided after that to throw in and run for the California State Senate, and that primary just went by here a couple weeks ago, and I was very, very honored to receive a resounding victory up and down the 12 county 4th Senate district here. So we have the runoff election this coming November here for that seat against one Democrat opponent there, and that'll be that particular situation here. An interesting thing, yesterday I was involved with there was a special election down in Senate District 15, which is a coastal district basically ranging from San Jose down to a little south of San Luis Obispo. It's the old Abel Maldonado seat that, since he ascended to the lieutenant governor, that Senate seat came open. Now, right now, that's been kind of seen as one of those squeaker Republican seats. So a colleague I served with in the Assembly for 4 out of my 6 years, Assemblyman Sam Blakesley, has decided to step up and run to fill that seat. He's a Republican colleague of mine down there too. And so that special election was yesterday, which was interesting. We were down walking precincts there trying to help Sam out in order to secure his election. And people only 2 weeks after the regular primary weren't quite geared up to have another election. You know, we'd go door to door, and many weren't aware there was even an election going on. Others were annoyed there was another election going on. Those are pretty short conversations. But we can talk a little bit about that if you like, but the results of that were in a four-way race that Sam received about 49.5 or 6 or 7% of the vote. They're still counting some of the provisionals, etc. And he prevailed over his Democrat opponent. But given that, it was a special election. There will be a runoff that's going to be held on another special basis in August. So that's kind of an interesting thing there. So with that, we're going to get ready to wind down to take a break here. So, Bob, why don't you lead us into that?
7:10 and 70 degrees in Reading, and we have Sam Paredes on the line, and I hope I pronounced that correctly. We'll be talking to him after break. You're listening to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio. Free Fire Radio at 7:13 in Shasta County, and it is 70 degrees outside. Forecast calling for partly sunny today, high near 91. Can you believe it is almost July? Winds between 10 and 13 miles an hour out of the south. That will continue through this evening, low around 64. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Absolutely excellent place. And Linda Vaught is going to be singing out there. I do believe that is on Friday. And putting on a very nice show. If you haven't yet been out there to Anselmo Vineyards, check it out. Absolutely gorgeous location. Now we go back to our guest host this morning, Carl and Linda, if you are just now joining us, are down in Sacramento. In fact, Carl joined in, and I had to say hello, goodbye very, very quickly. But our guest host this morning, Doug LaMalfa, and Doug, we do have a caller on the line for you.
Okay, thank you again. If you're listening, Carl, Linda, thanks for letting me sit in today, and what a neat honor. I'm glad that Carl's being recognized for his service and work as a veteran. It's a neat deal. So, Sam, are you there?
I sure am. How are you, Doug?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing just great.
Good. I heard you were in Chico last night.
Yep. Up talking to a tea party group in Chico, and it was amazing. It was wonderful.
Yep. Those are folks that are on the cutting edge of wanting to be involved and helping to define and preserve our liberties here. So I'm glad you made the trip to NorCal and that you're on with us here this morning.
It was really good.
Good, good. So, I know you're always having, excuse me, a very easy way down there in Sacramento with preserving our liberties, and there's always these positive gun bills trying to give us more gun rights and make it easier for us to conceal carry or buy ammunition. I'm being very facetious, of course, here. And so, I wanted to hear from you personally here today, and thank you for coming on. What is going on right now legislatively? I know you're on the cutting edge of that, and we've talked about this a little bit, but when I spoke to you yesterday, you were awaiting a committee hearing on what that is they're trying to do to us and our basic Second Amendment rights.
Yesterday was another one of those fun-filled, action-packed days at the legislature, and I am being facetious. And, of course, it just seems like the anti-gun leadership that runs both houses of the legislature really love putting gun bills in committees at exactly the same time so that those of us who are fighting to protect the Second Amendment have to run from one committee room to the next because our bills are coming up for hearing at exactly the same time. And yesterday we testified against AB 1934 by Assemblywoman Lori Saldana, and that was a bill to ban open carrying of unloaded firearms in public. And, it was all of the same gobbledygook that they put up, how they're scared of guns and people are intimidated, and it causes the police to waste resources to have to respond to these issues.
Tell us about that a little bit, because I bet a lot of people don't know that you already have that right to carry openly in public an unloaded weapon on your hip, on a holster like that. Tell us about that.
You're absolutely correct. Ever since California was first made a state, citizens of California had the right to carry a loaded firearm on their hip, and it wasn't until during Governor Ronald Reagan's term when the legislature passed the Mumford Act, which said that you couldn't carry a loaded gun, but you could carry an unloaded gun with magazines or bullets on the other side. As long as the gun wasn't loaded, you could carry it on your hip anywhere in the state of California. Later on, there were laws that passed that said you couldn't carry it into a courthouse or on a school ground in some so-called sensitive places. But yeah, we've had that right here in California since forever. And amazingly, Doug, as you well know, since California became a state, there is absolutely no record of anybody who has open carried of a crime being committed by any person who has exercised that right.
Well, now you're letting facts and things get in the way there too. So, you know, it's really amazing because I've looked at the manual there that different organizations have put out on your gun rights in California, and it's so restrictive of what you have to do to transport one in a vehicle and all that. So that is kind of surprising, I think, for the average listener, average citizen, to know that. Yeah, you could just pack one on your hip if you like and be perfectly within the law, other than what Ms. Saldana is trying to do down there.
Mm-hmm. So. No, you're absolutely right. Even that is a little bit confusing, because when you transport a handgun in particular, but it's true about any guns, in your vehicle, the law says that it has to be in a locked container or in a trunk of a vehicle. Can't be in the glove box or the utility box that's inside the vehicle, but a locked container of some sort or the trunk. Or, this is the part that people don't realize, the law also says that if the gun is in plain and open sight, that means sitting on the car seat, unloaded, and not covered by a blanket or a hat or you know, any other item, if it's just in plain open sight, that's legal to transport a firearm that way too. And many people will put their guns on their back seat and make sure it's unloaded, and they go to the range or they go to the store or whatever it is that they're going to do, the gun store, and transport their firearms legally that way too. So, you know,
handgun included, right?
It's not a problem.
Yeah, yeah. What? How about again? We have Sam Paredes here with Gun Owners of California as our guest here right now. And what other one are you looking at down there legislatively?
Yesterday we also worked against AB 2223 by Assemblyman Pedro Nava, one of the darlings of the environmental...
Hey, Sam. Sam, let's come back to this. We've got a quick break coming up right now, so let's come back on that Nava bill, please.
No problem.
Thank you.
605-4567. If you have questions for Doug LaMalfa or Sam Paredes, who we'll keep on the line over this break. It is 720. You're listening to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460 Clearly News Talk Radio.
The
724 on KCNR 1460 Clearly News Talk Radio. And this is Bob Belongi, Carl and Linda Bott down in Sacramento, as Carl is being honored as the North State Veteran of the Year. It is 70 degrees. And we have a traffic alert to let you know about on Lake Boulevard. Tree debris in the number one lane. That would be the inside lane. Three different places out there on Lake Boulevard. So, correction, that is on Interstate 5, just south of Lake Boulevard. So there's some tree debris out there on the freeway. So please keep that in mind. This portion of Free Fire Radio brought to you by Tobacco and Brew at 2143 Hilltop Drive, the finest walk-in humidor in North State. And Espresso Joe's, you go down there, meet Heather and the group at Espresso Joe's. Excellent place, of course, Tobacco and Brew, with this great meeting room. And Carl and Linda will be there in there on Friday with Colonel Tim Garrity, USMC, and he has an incredible story to tell. But now we come back to our guest host, Doug LaMalfa. Good morning, Doug, again.
Good morning. We have with us also right at this moment Sam Paredes from Gun Owners of California, who's letting us know about some of the issues going on in Sacramento with legislation. Sam had an opportunity, the chance to see the other night down in Oroville, too, at a very successful dinner going on for Gun Owners of California. I think I heard there might be one going on in Redding pretty soon, too.
Yep, we've got one coming up in Redding August 19th. My anniversary date.
Where are you going to be?
I'm going to be at our fundraising dinner. Thankfully, I have a very, very understanding wife who knows that the work that we do is very important, and that's why I've been married for 31 years. You know, it's a good thing.
And your son and your daughter were at that dinner too. Just fine, charming young folks. They're really, really enjoying getting to know them.
Thanks. It's kind of good to keep the Second Amendment in the family. You know, we're all pretty passionate about it, and so it's great to have them working with us.
So an August 19th dinner, where's that being held? Is that
at the Fissaro Hall at the County Fairgrounds. It's a Thursday night. It's a, you know, prime rib dinner, lots of guns to auction, and with a raffle and silent auction, some games, really a good time. It's, you know, we have some great, great friends and supporters in Reading, and look forward to seeing you folks there, too.
I will do my best to be there. I always enjoy that event.
Thanks.
So let's come back and tell us about that Pedro Nava bill down there that they're working on.
AB 2223 would ban the use of all lead ammunition in all state wildlife areas.
Prime example right there. Now, I remember working with you a couple years ago on this. It was a deal where they only wanted to ban lead in the area where the condor was. You know, we'll just stop right there. We won't, try and do any more than that. This is just a very simple bill. We heard all that at the time there.
Mm-hmm.
And look at the incremental way they keep moving forward to do the ban. So please go ahead.
Yep, it's a very well planned on their part, dialectic step forward, and they're taking their chunk a piece at a time, but they want to go ahead and ban all lead ammunition because they say that they've got information that golden eagles in Michigan have affected by consuming other animals that have eaten lead shot or lead bullets or something like that, when in fact here in California we have virtually no endangered species that are affected by hunters. All species that are wildlife for game are on the increase in California. Bald eagles, all raptors, except for the California condor, even with the protections that they have, is on the decline because they cannot exist without human feeding and intervention and all kinds of stuff that we have to do to keep those birds alive. Other than that, all of the animals, wild turkeys, growing by leaps and bounds in California. We have, well, obviously wild turkey wasn't quite native to California. We have more wild turkey than it's an amazing success story. But they want to go ahead and ban it because this unnatural element called lead that they try to ignore comes out of nature.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a natural element. They say that it is causing all these terrible things when in fact there are no problems.
Sam, we have 1 minute. We want have 1 minute left, so I want you to be able to cover what you would like as far as the legislation and what we should be doing about that as concerned gun rights folks.
You know, people have to get involved, just like they're getting involved in tea parties and getting involved working for candidates. They need to get involved to protect their rights. Go to our website, www.gunownersca.com, GUNOWNERSCA.com, and find out what the bills are that are affecting your rights. Get involved. Write letters to your legislators. If they're good legislators like you, Doug, and we are so excited to have you back in the legislature as a state senator. I can't tell you how proud we are.
It does make a difference, those letters, those calls, those emails. Sam, thanks so much for being on with us this morning, and I look forward to seeing you at the dinner up here, so get the word out on that, and I really appreciate your work.
KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio. We join Fox News in progress. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio at 7:35 on KCNR 1460. Forecast is calling for partly cloudy skies and high near 91. Let's call it partly sunny, which is pretty remarkable this close to July. Calm winds, and then it'll be about 10 to 13 miles an hour. Fire danger starting to ratchet up, so please be fire safe. Currently, it is 70 degrees at Reading. The weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Carl and Linda Bott down in Sacramento today, as Carl is being honored for being the North State Veteran of the Year. Our guest host, Doug LaMalfa, now, and we have another caller on the line for Doug. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning. Thanks for listening, everyone. We're here at KCNR 1460. I'm getting to sit in for Carl and Linda this morning. We have a guest now who's... a good friend from up north here. She's a supervisor up in Siskiyou County, Marsha Armstrong. She was just elected to her third term and comes from a very strong background of protecting and working for our ag resources and the use of all of our resources here. I thought she'd be a very interesting topic for us down here to become a little more aware of what's going on with property rights and water rights and the situation we're up on the Klamath, for example. Due to a handful in the environmental movement, they want to remove sitting existing hydroelectric dams that store water for electricity generation. You're probably aware of that, but that's actually coming to a head in a bond this year. So with us, Supervisor Marsha Armstrong. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine. Great. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. So what do you think what's going on there? I mean, let's first talk briefly about the dams, and any callers out there, please, if you'd like to call in, we'll try and make a moment here to take your questions on these subjects too. But the idea is that removing dams upon the Klamath River that have been in place 50, 60, 80 years, producing hydroelectric, green, CO2-free electricity, is going to somehow help fish passage up there. And I know that that's really got a lot of people up in arms, and anybody that likes, you know, reliable electricity supply. What do you think about that?
Well, it will, if it goes through, it will be the largest dam removal project so far in the continental United States. It will remove the dam at Iron Gate and the two hydro facilities at COPCO in California, and then one dam in Oregon. It's supposed to be to help the fish, but there are a lot of concerns about what will happen when they're removed. In Siskiyou County, there was a settlement agreement. Siskiyou County did not sign it, so we were opposed to this.
So in California, I guess this means we have too much electricity supply and probably too much water storage that we're able to do this? I'm being facetious here, I'm sorry. But
It requires a license from the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission or FERC, to put a dam across the river with a hydro facility, so they have to get a license. And in our case, it went all the way through to the end, and it came down to the water quality permit, and the state of California would not issue it.
So the problem lies, again, with the state of California on this issue.
Yeah,
Marcia.
And then everybody piled on so many expensive mitigations on the license that it was became that, as far as the business was concerned, which is Pacific Power, Pacific Core, it was no longer economically feasible for them to operate the dam. Some of the concerns we have are behind the dams is a lot of very fine organic sediment, and there are a lot of species that are predatory species of fish that live in the, like bass and perch that live in the lakes. And so we're very concerned about what will happen to the river when all of this stuff is let go down the river, and they're just going to let it go.
Oh, so yeah, that's what I'd like to hear. What can you tell our listeners is the plan for the accumulated silt and things that are behind the dam that are obviously going to affect the free flow of the water? You know, when you have flood events, this silt probably is going to be pushing down the stream all the way out to the ocean. What is the likely effect of that going to be on the river's health, the fish, turbidity, all that? What do you see happening there?
Well, a lot of the science on the Klamath is really bad. We discovered that when they were doing some sampling of the sediment, they did very minimal sampling, that they discovered there was dioxin, which is a cancer-producing agent that is bioaccumulative. It means it goes through the food supply and accumulates. And they kind of skipped over that, and we caught it. So we made them do a big study on the what's in the sediment, and they're doing that now. Also, the transport model that they did, computer model to show what's going to happen with the sediment, we discovered was not an accepted model and was a very experimental model, so we made them go back and redo that. We don't know what's going to happen. These suspended sediments have organic matter in them. That could consume all the oxygen in the river going down the stream.
Okay, Marcia, we're coming up on a break here, but so hold that thought right there, and we'd like to hear a little more about that and what that means for us. So we'll be right back after this break here on KCNR.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio. It is 7:44 and 71 degrees in Redding. This portion of Free Fire Radio brought to you by B&T Satellite just off Airport Road, a little bit south of the Burrito Bandito. If you head out on Airport Road, you see all those dishes out front. That's what it's all about there at B&T Satellite, ReddingHDTV.com on the web. Doug Tooley's the owner. He is a veteran, served with the 82nd Airborne. I never knew in all those years that I'd known Doug until recently that he was a man who jumped out of perfectly good airplanes, but he's a good guy. He's been servicing local customers since 1985. Now, if the dog is not on your remote, or maybe it got sat on, or the battery's leaked, or whatever, well, bring in your old remote. The first 20 people to bring in their old dish remote will get a brand new one from B&T Satellite. Check them out. They are great people. 244-1988 off of Airport Road, just down from Burrito Bandito. Our guest host this morning, Doug LaMalfa.
Thank you again. Sitting in for Carl Linda Bott here. We have a guest from Siskiyou County, Supervisor Marcia Armstrong. We were talking about the dam removals proposed or maybe on the way here. Hopefully we can get this stopped, in my view. Take us through a little more on that silt situation you were talking about before our break here. And also, we do want to touch on the situation going on in the Scott and Shasta Valley, too. We have a few minutes left, so Marcia, please.
Sure, yeah. The sediments, so right now they're in the process of doing a NEPA, a National Environmental Policy Act analysis, and they're doing the science on all of this, and there's a comment period for what's called scoping until July 15th. But we're really concerned about the sediment. The agreement has no liability. It waives all liability for anybody.
For the government, you mean?
We could get stuck with the cleanup on this.
Tell me, what is the cost of this going to be to taxpayers, to ratepayers on either side of the border, but especially us as Californians for this dam removal, not only in the removal, but what's it mean for electricity supply?
Well, they've already had three or four increases before the PUC this year, so adding it all up with the, I think it's only 1.7% for the dams itself, but that doesn't include the cost of replacement hydropower energy. It doesn't. Then there's a bond that's going to be on the ballot next fall for the state of California for people to contribute. I think it's $250 million.
Yeah, $250 million is my understanding, and that bond for you as taxpayers to pay to remove dams at a time when, you know, we're at a water crisis and such.
Yeah, that's in that water bond that's on the ballot. You know, but the big thing is for us is the liability is they've capped their liability, and then they're just going to walk away from it, and it looks like it's going to be a gigantic mess that we're going to have to clean up, and we can't do that.
Well, that, and again, we have a series of dams that provide power for about 70, 75,000 homes. It's renewable power, it's green power, there's no emissions, and they want to tear that out, and we have to go find it somewhere else. So, Marshall,
if dioxin is found in that in the sediment, as we suspect, it's a hazardous waste issue, and conceivably they would have to remove 20,000 cubic yards of sediment and put it in a hazardous waste landfill.
And how many truckloads is that from Siskiyou County down to somewhere in the Central
Valley?
Well, right
now, just to remove the dams, not the sediment, they're considering 18 months, 24/7 of dump trucks going in and out along a very narrow, badly maintained road along the edge of the Klamath.
And what do we expect the carbon footprint is for that, right? when we're worried about such things. Now, a terrible thing going on by Fish and Game over in the Scott and Shasta Valley here on the permits that farmers need to divert water like they've been doing for 150 years there. Could you touch on what's going on with that, please?
Well, there's a permit called a 1602 permit that traditionally has been required when you get in the river and you push up, like check, there's gravel dams that people sometimes do in
temporary each year as you irrigate, right?
For irrigation, yeah. It pushes up a dam and then allows the water to build up so it can go down a ditch. And now they're saying that anybody who diverts water, including just turning on a wheel on a head gate to open the gate to let the water go down without any kind of work in the stream bed, is going to be requiring a permit, which is pretty much a right to a permit to farm. And in addition to that, there's another one called 5937 that they're saying they can take their water rights if they think that the fish need it. So once they require you to have this permit, then they can attach a condition on it that they'll take your water right for in-stream flows.
And if you don't have this permit, my understanding is that if you're unable to get it or get it done somehow, that continuing to divert water as you've done in your farming and ranching practices up there for maybe five or six generations, could see a $25,000 per day fine for doing what you used to do. Is that correct?
Well, part of this is the 1602 permit. Once it's required, they're going to make a condition that you also get an incidental take permit. And there are heavy fines if you don't have it. There's also the cost of the permits. Some of these, I have one farmer who has 80 head of cattle, and it's going to cost him $14,000 for the permit. So a year, so that's...
And he's unable to absorb those costs, and I guess my way of thinking is, why should he have to absorb those costs for doing what he has been doing for maybe many, many years, right?
Yeah, and, you know, when you're raising cattle or even when you're growing crops, they need water. They're biological entities. They need water, so...
Well, you know, I appreciate you being on this morning here, so... We're running out of time. Time sure flies on the air here, but thank you for calling us, and we have a little chatting to do with the Fish and Game to reel back to where they should be on that, because it's out of control. Thanks so much, Supervisor.
Thank you, Doug, for inviting me.
Okay, Supervisor Marsha Armstrong, Siskiyou County. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
751 on KCNR, 1460 Clearly News Talk Radio. We'll be back with our guest host, Doug LaMalfa, here on Free Fire Radio on KCNR, Clearly News Talk Radio. Six minutes before 8 o'clock on KCNR, Free Fire Radio. This is Bob Belanti. Our guest host is Doug LaMalfa. Weather for today, partly sunny, a high near 91, calm winds 10 to 13 miles an hour. Tonight's low, 64 degrees. The weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. And Doug, a lot going on, and we'll take us up to the top of the hour.
All right. Thanks again, folks. We're at KCNR with Carl Lindebott. I get to sit in today for them as they go to Sacramento, and Carl receives that Veteran of the Year honor. That's pretty neat. So, again, you've heard some interesting things so far this hour. I can't believe how fast an hour goes on the air here, but a lot of battles, a lot of issues. I was talking a little bit earlier about a special election that was happening in the Senate District 15 down there. It goes from San Luis Obispo basically to Santa Cruz and part of San Jose area. And that was interesting. We were walking precincts down there yesterday. And so that's one of those classic Republican-Democrat battles down there that is one of those hard-fought ones with philosophical differences in there. The reason, again, for that was Abel Maldonado, who was the senator there, was named as the lieutenant governor midterm when Mr. Garamendi went off to Washington, D.C. And so the special election is being held. That was yesterday, only 2 weeks after the regular primary election. Interestingly, it was four candidates. My old colleague on the Republican side, Sam Blakesley, and then a former colleague on the Democrat side, John Laird, who we were there 6 years at the same time. Sam overlapped four with me.
and then a Libertarian candidate and an American Independent candidate. So in this special election, it's a little different rules here. Anybody that would get 50% plus one vote would be the outright winner. And should nobody win outright, then there will be a runoff election with all four of those candidates. And that would be held in August once again. Interestingly, people weren't aware of the special election 2 weeks after the primary, or they were mad about it and like that as we go door to door. But where I'm tying this into is that a proposition passed on the primary a couple weeks ago called Proposition 14, and that's one term is the open primary, where basically where you would have all the different candidates would be in the primary, and of all the parties. In which case, they run off, they play off down to the top two. Whoever the top two candidates receiving votes would be the ones then that go on to the November election in the fall of that year. And so that was a pretty controversial piece that was put on the ballot, and it was one that Abel Maldonado, ironically enough, was pushing on there. And so the voters in California, because they want change, they want things to be different, they want to shake up and grab the attitudes of those in Sacramento and make them think a little differently, they passed that. But what I'm looking at with the situation is now you're going to have the parties have vowed to have internal elections to determine who their primary candidates are going to be and push them forward and go around that system. So that's an interesting topic of discussion that's going on. Now, Prop 14 won't affect that one yesterday, but had it done so, you would have had just the top two candidates coming out of that, and the so-called maybe minor parties would have been left out of the fray for the runoff election in the fall. I think that's the sad thing about this, is the danger is that you're just going to have maybe in certain areas where it's a very strong Democrat district, only two Democrats are going to make it through the initial primary, and you would have only two Democrats talking to all the voters of that district in a runoff election, thanks to Prop 14. But as is the pattern, politicians in Sacramento and D.C., they're always looking for a way to get around things. They're always trying to get around Proposition 13, other laws that are put in place, even the one on redistricting, taking it out of the hands of the legislators. They're trying to pick that off. That was just passed in the fall of 08. And so parties are going to be moving to settle instead who the candidates are in smoke-filled rooms in order to get around Prop 14, because they don't want the general public crossing over and voting outside of their party to put the party candidate forward. I can understand the frustration with the parties for that, but did we actually gain anything in this process with Prop 14? I think we lost with that. The program we had worked pretty good. If we would have allowed district redistricting to work and a little more area of finance reform, we could have had a better situation. So with that, we got to go to a break here and look forward to the next hour and look forward to your calls. So thank you.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio on KCNR. Fox News is next, and then more with our guest host, Doug LaMalfa. This is KCNR, Shasta Redding. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Bott, if you're just joining us, are down in Sacramento today. So if your alarm went off, that's why you're not hearing Carl's usual dulcet tones on the air. They are Carl's being honored as the North State Veteran of the Year down there in Sacramento. So we definitely give a big congratulations to him. Our guest host this morning, Doug LaMalfa, we'll have him in just a moment. It is 75 degrees, 605-4567, the phone. And it's ringing right now, so I'll take care of that. And Doug, take it away.
Thank you very much. So do I have dulcet tone too, Bob?
Quite dulcet.
All right. Hey, glad to be on here with you today. Thanks to Carl and Linda. I hope they're having a great time down at Sacramento getting that honor there. So lots going on that affect the business of the state of California, but also at the local level here, too. We have the state doing its, the legislature doing its annual budget dance here and trying to figure out how it's going to balance a $21 billion hole that has been created, in my view, by overspending and lack of discipline.
And so frequently what happens is that in the quest to overturn every stone to look for dollars to fit their spending problem in Sacramento, they come to you as a taxpayer looking for more taxes, more fees, more fines, and to local government, where the services you expect really truly are delivered here. And so measures have been taken in the past to try and protect those local government dollars from Sacramento's takings, and there's even new ones underway right now that they're contemplating shifting. But a gentleman we have with us this morning, Mr. Charles Anderson, he works with the League of California Cities, and he's going to talk with us about a measure that they've been working on this year to further tighten the reins on the state legislature being able to take dollars that are supposed to be flowing to local government, to your cities, and to some other extent to counties as well. But he, with being with League of Cities, he's going to talk with us about that. So, Charles, welcome this morning.
Hey, good morning, Doug. Thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure to work with you during my time there, both in and out of the legislature, on the issues that are important to preserving that that relationship and those dollars that are supposed to flow that our cities use for services people expect. And so in the past there's been Proposition 1A, and then the end around that the legislature does on that, redefining how certain taxes and fees are done so that they can get their hands on it. And now you're working on a measure to further reel in the state of the legislature, the state of California, from coming after those funds that have to do with public safety, transportation, and other local government services. What is it? Tell me about this project you're working on here, Charles.
Definitely. We, because the past two decades or more, the state has consistently went to local government to take and borrow and steal our local funds. The big California cities, along with some a coalition to protect jobs and protect businesses, have gotten together to put a stop to it and say enough is enough. And so what we did was we put together an initiative called the Local Taxpayer Public Safety and Transportation Act. We went and collected over 1.1 million signatures, and actually we just found out yesterday that it qualified, so it will be on the ballot come November. But basically what it does, as you had mentioned, was that it prohibits the state from taking, borrowing, and redirecting local taxpayer funds. And those funds are dedicated to public safety and emergency response and local vital services, everything that we rely on a daily basis so that we can get to work and get our children to school safely.
So, previous measures have been Proposition 1A, and more specifically on gas tax dollars, there was a Proposition 42, I think that was done in 2002, and then another different Proposition 1A that further reined that in. I know those are all kind of interrelated and things that local government are interested in. Can you review a little bit what has gone on with those different measures that voters have passed and supported to send the same message? Legislature, keep your paws off of these funds, that go for highway repair and highway upgrade and public safety locally like that. Can you review that a little bit?
Sure. Under both Prop 1A's and the Prop 42, what we did is that was already an attempt to start reining in what the state does at a local level. Prior to those initiatives, the state would just come and take whatever they wanted, do whatever they wanted, and local voters or the public decided, you know what, it's not really good public policy to just take money that local government is relying upon, not our local tax dollars, our sales tax and property tax dollars. And so what they did is they said, okay, we're going to try to put an end to it, but we're going to allow the state opportunities to, under extreme circumstances,
in emergencies, right?
Right, in an emergency.
Yeah. Hey, let's. We need to wind down for a break here, real quick. So, we'll come back to that. But indeed, voters have been frustrated by it because they see those services affecting. They're having to drive over these potholes. They're having to worry about whether they're going to get the 9/11 response that, or 911 response that they expect. So appreciate you being on with us here, and we'll come right back to you on this topic. Thanks, Charles.
It's 8:11 on KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. We have callers on the line. We'll be back after this break. It is 8:14 on KCNR, Clearly News Talk Radio. You're listening to the Free Fire Radio Show, and the weather today is going to be, let's see here, high near 91, winds out of the south between 10 and 13 miles an hour, currently 75 degrees. Weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards, just east of Reading on Highway 44. If you've never been out there, excellent place, absolutely beautiful. You can take a trip to the Italian vineyards and not even leave the state of California. Our guest this morning, Doug LaMalfa. And Doug, we do have callers on the line.
Right, thank you. Great to be on KCNR. We have Jim calling in. He had a fish and game question from one of our previous topics, talking about fish and game and those issues up north. So go ahead, Jim.
Yep. Morning, Doug. I'm sure glad to see that you won, and well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
But the thing that I want to know is, how is the fish and game people, how are they picked to run that job? Because they are... like the Forest Service and the Fish and Game people, they just kind of cram down things they want to do, and there's like nobody's going to fire them or anything. Like, they can just do what they want to. So how are they picked, and who's responsible?
Well, there's a couple different branches of that. There's the Fish and Game Commission, which those are, excuse me, that's a several-member board that oversees and makes decisions on policy for fish and game. And then there's the Fish and Game director himself or herself. That they're all appointed by the governor, and they're all subject to confirmation by the state senate. And so whether the governor wants to appoint people that are a little more left or right on that, it's all going to be subject to the whim and the desire of the state legislature to confirm them. And so it's difficult to get what, in my view, are right-minded people appointed to that, because the liberal wing of the state senate can block those appointments. So you end up with someone that's much more compromised in a lot of cases on the commission appointments. And then the director, I think the governor has a little more discretion on that, and he can appoint who he likes. But the policy comes down to a lot of times the whim of the legislature, and that's why the legislature needs to be made up of people that actually care about liberties, care about property rights, and some kind of balance with environmental. And so it's very, very frustrating, because everything seems to be tilted much more towards environmental extremism and what we have going on, we were talking about earlier, with permits and dam removal, things of that nature. The legislature should be spending much more time on oversight of fish and game and all the other state departments and agencies, having them in hearings and saying, you know, what is it you're trying to accomplish here with this policy? So hope that helps, Jim. Thanks. And we're going to come back to Charles here with the League of Cities.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Doug.
Okay, Charles, let's pick that up where we were here. Thanks for letting us take that call. And
yeah.
Efforts have been made to limit the state from seizing local level funds. And we talked a little about the Prop 1As and 42. This measure, you said, will it indeed appear on the November election? And I guess the Secretary of State is still assigning numbers, something Prop 18 and above. Do you know anything about what prop number that may be?
I thought maybe it was 22, but since I don't have the information, I guess I can't say what it is, but it was up there, yeah.
Yeah, that's still just happening right now, I think. So there'll be a whole slew of propositions on that November ballot, I think, what, 10, 12, something like that?
I heard that it might be, I think it might be less than that. I don't know the exact number.
Yet. Yeah, they had to get them certified. I know there's an AB 32 rollback, and there's a marijuana one, and there's this one, and there's the water bond, which may or may not stay on there, I'm hearing, too. So.
Yeah.
So tell us a little more about what your efforts are with League of Cities and where you want to go with this in the next weeks and months here.
Sure. Okay. Well, what we're where we're at now is we just qualified for the November ballot yesterday. We got the last couple more counties have reported in that got us over that nearly 600,000 or nearly 700,000 threshold. So at this phase, you know, it's really expensive to run to run an initiative in California, and so we're working on trying to raise the funds necessary to mount a good public campaign to make sure the public is aware of what this does. That it is a local government protection measure. It puts the power back in the hands of the people at the local level. It allows people to have a better say, I think, and a more direct say over how their sales tax and property tax dollars are spent. It's a lot easier to go to a city council member if you have a beef with them. You probably have their home number even, and you can call them. Whereas it's a little bit more difficult, I think the public feels, to access state government. Now, like, for example, Doug, when you were in the assembly, you're actually one of the easier member states in contact with at the, within your district. But you're one person out of the 120 assembly members and senators there, and so to try to affect change at the state level in California, it feels very difficult to the local citizen. And well, so we feel by putting some protections back at the local level, I think that it helps, it can potentially help, help us have a better say over how our tax dollars are spent.
I'm a strong believer in allowing more local control because, you know, you are going to see your city council member or even your supervisor in the store, and it's a lot harder to come to Sacramento and find your legislator, although I spend a lot of time in the district myself. It isn't always the case. So we're going to take another quick break here. We'll come back with you on who some of the opposition is to this type of a measure. So thanks, Charles.
821 and 75 degrees on KCNR 1460 Clearly News Talk Radio. 824 on KCNR 1460 Free Fire Radio. I'm Bob Belongi, Carl and Linda down in Sacramento. If you're just joining us, our guest host this morning is Doug LaMalfa. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew and Espresso Joe's. They're at 2143 Hilltop Drive. They have the finest walk-in humidor in the North State, an excellent meeting room that is also the home of Free Fire Radio Online, in their town hall meetings on Fridays. This Friday, Colonel Tom Garrity, USMC retired, with his book Peacekeepers at War. There'll be a book signing, and he tells a very compelling story. Right now, back to our guest host, Doug LaMalfa.
Thanks, Bob. Hey, Pink Floyd bumper music. Way to go, like that. Hey, we're coming back to Charles Anderson with the League of Cities here, and we're talking about a proposal to help end the raid by the state on local government dollars. Like, for example, just last year in this currently expiring budget, there was borrowed about $2 billion in property taxes from local-level government, and we see that the crisis the state has, there's no way in the world they're going to repay that. And then, as one of the discussions being talked about, I think, by Senator Steinberg down there, is to shift more responsibility for services that the state is presently supposed to be paying for to the local level for cities and counties to have to deal with. And saying, we're going to give you this responsibility, you have to do it, you're mandated to do it. And so in order to pay for it, we're going to tell you to be the bad guys and have to raise sales taxes or property taxes or some other measure to backfill that. So how's that playing there, Charles?
Well, that's what we have right now. We just have a situation. It's a perpetual situation. Every single year, the state has come up with these ideas of how to take more money. And at the same time, not only take more money, but then increase the level of responsibility that cities and counties have to try to still maintain, to maintain service, especially for the counties. The county provides a lot of health and human services for people. You know, and they have the sheriff and all that funds, a lot of it comes from the state at the local level, but some of that comes from a state level. It's a program level. Now, what happens when you go and you take money from local government and then you provide more responsibility is something's got to give. And it seems like a really unfair situation when cities and counties are doing what they're supposed to be doing, balancing their budgets, getting their budgets passed on time, and then at the state level, not only can they not pass the budget on time, but they can't seem to do anything fiscally responsible except borrow against their own dollars that they don't even have.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, and I sympathize with, I work a lot with supervisors and city council members up and down this formerly 9-county district. I had the assembly and would be 12-county one in the Senate. And, I'm on their side on the issue because they do have to be responsible. They have to balance it every year, and they do so. And probably the only downside to that is that at the state legislature level, they figured, they'll find a way to get it done because they always do. And that actually helps to, in one bizarre way, perpetuate the behavior because they know they're going to get it done. So you guys need to be rewarded for, by and large, doing good work there. Now, if people want to complain about what the city does, it's pretty easy to drive downtown and go to the city council chamber and weigh in on that, or with their supervisors. So, Charles, who would oppose such a measure like this here? Now, it's going to be a battle on the ballot. What kind of folks are lining up that want to oppose your effort here?
Well, we'll see the official opposition here in the next couple weeks when the ballot arguments are created. I think it's mid-July we'll see those put on the ballot on that measure. But you can imagine that the people who aren't going to appreciate our measure to protect local tax dollars are going to be those that rely on the state backfilling the dollars that they get with local tax dollars. And so what we have is a situation where the state's going to have to come up with something, at least on paper, that looks balanced eventually. They're going to have to probably make some cuts in different places.
I think I saw the California Teachers Association as one of them that was lining up against this in quotes there. But
and that's exactly right, because that's the prop. There's a Prop 98 guarantee, minimum guarantee, but then the state does some things to try to reduce what that guarantee is. But it's the more dollars that the state can bring in from all of its different sources to keep that spending level up for schools. Definitely want it to work out that way.
Yeah, and I imagine we'll be hearing from the SEIU on it down there. The purple shirts are always in that building there, working that. So it doesn't seem to be solution oriented in Sacramento. So I think what you folks are trying to do will be certainly trying to bring a discipline here and protect what you have, and make the legislature be accountable to itself. We got about 45 seconds left, Charles, so why don't you wrap up on what you would like to on this proposition in about half a minute here.
Okay, so first I just want to say, Doug, thank you very much for your work on this initiative. You've collected over 400 signatures yourself, and we're very appreciative of that. The second thing is, for people who have questions or they want more information on this initiative, all they need to do is go to the website www.savelocalservices.com, and they'll be able to get all the latest information.
Thanks much, Charles. We appreciate having you on, so we'll talk to you soon.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio. It is 8:34 in Reading, and it is 76 degrees. Carl and Linda Bott just caught on the phone to me, and they had to ring off because they're down in the Capitol building right now, according to what Carl said. And he's going to be, of course, honored as the North State Veteran of the Year, which is why he is not on the air. And we do have our guest host this morning, Doug LaMalfa, the former assemblyman, and we certainly hope soon to be state senator. And I got to say real quick here that I met this gentleman down in Red Bluff at a remote for the radio station I used to work for just as he was getting into this morass, and his eyes were opened considerably over the years, and it's been a pleasure to know him both on a news level and I dare say as a friend, and he is a friend to the North State. So, Doug, we do have John on the line.
All right, thank you for that. Yeah, John, please.
How are you this morning?
Good, how are you?
Welcome to the show. You and I have met, and I'm sure that with all the people you meet, you don't remember, but we did the Boston Patriot debate with you and Rick, and it was very enjoyable.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah.
This has nothing to do with your position as the state. I'm just calling you as the guest host of the radio station. I'm going to sound off a little bit, and then at the end, I'd kind of like your opinion about things.
Sure.
But there's a lot of blame already being passed around about the number one environmental disaster of our time, and the severity of it is being minimalized by the blame game. We have a factual, not potentially, but a truly factual world-changing catastrophe going on, and people are playing the Democrats, the Republicans, BP, more drilling, no drilling, when the true issue is containment, cleanup, and collection, and correction. What do you see as the future of this disaster? And, I mean, I think most people are just overlooking the enormity of it. Some of the environmentalists have said that it's going to go all the way up the eastern seaboard and into the Arctic ice underneath the ice and freeze. What do you think?
Well, that's hard for me to call, not being that type of geologist and oil man and whatever, but it's a situation, obviously, that once it's said and done, the investigation as to how the protocols were being followed, I think, will reveal that they weren't behaving how they should have on the safety of that. And it's certainly a golden opportunity for those that like to control things and take over, the federal government, Obama crew, all that, to try and stifle any more offshore drilling. And that's the danger in this thing, that even though this is going to be an isolated incident, that safety protocols will be much more better enforced if they were not in this case, that they're going to use this as an advantage to change our lifestyle and say, you know, no more oil use, everybody has to drive a Prius, blah, blah, blah. And that's a danger in this thing, because we have an administration that this is their agenda already, and this will be a golden excuse to do that. Now, this doesn't take a bit away from the fact that this is a horrible disaster. Nobody likes seeing these pictures of what's going on down there with the wildlife and the coast and all that. But that doesn't mean we have to take the extreme of saying no more oil drilling offshore or on, et cetera. So that's where we're going to have tough people.
The unfortunate part is that that came to being at the same week that increased oil drilling was approved.
Yeah, you wonder how that all times out, huh?
And, you know, the thing that kind of I find interesting is the judge's ruling yesterday that they could not stop all drilling, and reasonably so. I mean, I worked for the airline industry for the majority of my career, and the horrible word crashes comes about often, but we don't shut down the airlines because there's an aircraft failure.
Or get rid of automobiles or any of the other things.
Or anything else. And, I mean, we are definitely, I think, in not in my lifetime, but in the next generation, we're going to see a transition away from oil, I think, surely.
It'll get there, but why we have to do this force-feed thing? John, I'm sorry we have to cut away.
Yeah, we got
to
move along.
Okay,
Doug.
I understand. You guys have a great day, and
right.
Nice having you with us, Doug.
Thank you so much.
All right. And we have on the other line, we also have Bruce on line one. And, Bruce, good morning.
Hi, Bruce.
Well, good morning. Hello there.
Yeah, we're here.
Hello, Doug.
Glad to have you. What's your concern or thought
today? Congratulations on your primary victory there.
Well,
I met you up there also at the Tea Party, the other ones.
Oh, okay.
And gave you the Independent Conservative Republicans pamphlet from the good old state of Texas. I'm sure you got a good read out of that.
After the forum, I remember that.
Yeah, anyhow, what are we going to do about this immigration issue? I mean, it's the lip service no longer applies, because nobody wants to do anything about it, and it's just getting worse and worse. Now we have cartel people on American soil down there that are manning lookouts to watch our border patrol. Is it going to actually take somebody, I mean, more people getting killed before they step up the plate, or is it just a wasted effort of trying to get something done? Because nothing's been done and hasn't been done, and it's been going on and on and on. You got 2,000 a day at least coming across that border, and nothing changes.
It's really a
bad thing that's going to happen to America. Our sovereignty is going down the tubes.
One little thing we can be doing that probably would demonstrate the right kind of support would be supporting Arizona, you know, economically, and denouncing people like the city of Sacramento. It's just this big bandwagon now to show how politically correct everybody is by denouncing Arizona's efforts, which mirrors a lot of what the federal government's policy already is on illegal immigration. But it's sure politically correct to run around and say, oh, how bad Arizona is and all this. And we need, as good citizens, to support them and denounce the political correctness and all these measures being taken by sanctuary cities and others to say how they're coming out and saying this is such a bad thing that Arizona did, because they're taking the bull by the horns, where the federal government is sitting on their hands on the issue.
But what do you think? Is there any chance at all of anything ever happening down there unless you get a bunch of Border Patrolmen killed?
I would rather think it doesn't take another crisis to do that. That people losing their lives because it's, but you know, there doesn't seem to be the desire for the feds to do anything meaningful on illegal immigration. So you're going to have to watch how this thing plays out in court with the Arizona law, etc., and try and see have other states that are like-minded push forward to it and push through this stuff. They're going to have to be strong in order to complete this mission.
Well, if they don't toughen up the laws, and I mean really enact the tough laws and do something about hiring of these people and securing that border down there, it's never going to get any better.
We have to strive for that. We're up against it on time.
Hey, Bruce, we got to step in here, and thank you very much for your call, sir. All righty, and it is 8:41. Call that 8:42 on KCNR News Talk. Try that again. KCNR, clearly News Talk Radio. We have another caller on the line. Lines are all stacked up, but give it a try. 605-4567. We'll be back after these messages. 8:45, 15 minutes in front of 9 o'clock on KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio. This portion of the show brought to you by BNT Satellite off Airport Road, just down from Burrito Bandito. Doug Tooley's the owner there, a veteran with he was served in the 82nd Airborne, and he's been servicing local customers since 1985. And they've got a special going on right now. If your remote got trashed, Doug got hold of it, whatever, first 20 people to bring in their old remote will get a brand new one. That's BNT Satellite. They're on the web at ReadingHDTV.com. You can call them up, 244-1988. Carl and Linda out of town, and our guest host this morning, Doug LaMalfa. Doug?
Good morning, everyone. Good being on the air. I don't think we'll leave Carl and Linda's station in rubble here, having me visited here. So we have... another guest I want to speak with here today is David on there.
Yeah, hi, Doug. How are you, sir?
Hi. Good. This is David Wolf. He's a legislative director here at in Sacramento for the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, a very strong organization that is on the side of taxpayers and private property rights and common sense measures, and at least in my opinion, that help us to be prosperous and preserve our rights as citizens in California. So a lot of stuff going on down there with the budget season on and some of the close of deadline of legislation as well. So I'm sure you're monitoring lots of issues there, David. What's your favorite to talk about right now?
Yeah, I mean, one of the ones I wanted to mention here right off the top, Doug, is just some of the major tax increases that have been proposed by the Democrats during the course of this budget process.
I'm surprised. I'm shocked that they would propose that.
Tax increases? I know. It's stunning. Seriously, though, Doug, it is stunning that after a $12.6 billion tax increase last year, including, you know, very regressive oil sales and sales income and car taxes last year with Prop 1A, you know, they would come back and continue to, you know, impose and desire additional tax increases be foisted on the people of California. And that is really what's ridiculous about this whole process.
Funny one I heard about. I don't say it's not funny, but it's just the beverage recycling fund, the containers, you know, your cans and your bottles, etc. One of the schemes I heard is to borrow against that fund for many years to securitize against that money and use that to solve this year's budget. So, I mean, how does that work long term, where, you know, the next 5 or 10 or 20 years worth of recycled cans and the money that you pay at the register that goes into that fund, we're going to borrow against that, and we're supposed to be paying this money out when you turn in your recyclables? I mean, David, help me, please.
Yes, Doug. No, I mean, I wish it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me either, but I will endeavor to explain it. You did a good job setting it up. The the program that the Assembly Democrats are pushing, the tax increase, would basically borrow against future revenues in the beverage container recycling fund to fund current programs. And so it would basically set up a 20-year borrowing scheme to fund 1 year's worth of current programs. And the problem with that is first and foremost, the fund is basically insolvent. Legislators have borrowed over $500 million of the program funds over the past 4 or 5 years to pay for things like AB 32 implementation or to subsidize general fund revenue. So,
but
the fund
it makes money as a standalone issue because, say, of every 100 cans or bottles that you buy and pay a nickel on at the store, maybe only 85 of them get recycled, and so the state gets to keep that extra money, right?
Right. No, and the redemption rate, Doug, for cans is currently about 70%.
Okay, I was right.
Which is actually the highest it's ever been, and I think that's part and parcel because of the economic situation that the state is facing. Redemption rates are a bit higher. But the fact is that redemption rate wasn't really ever supposed to be higher than 65% for the fund to remain solvent.
Right.
And then when you add in all this additional borrowing and stuff, you've really put it in a hole. Whereby trying to securitize against it is just going to create a new general fund burden that our kids are going to have to pay for.
And that there's many aspects of what's going on. I just thought that was an example people can really grasp there on the recycling fund. Tell us about some of the other ideas. I mean, we were talking with a fellow from local government a while ago that last year's budget they borrowed $2 billion from property taxes as a one-time deal, supposedly, in order to get through last year's budget. Where is the cycle of borrowing in order to get through this year and, you know, kick the can down the road? You know, David, tell me, you know, what do you see coming up in this one and as a real solution?
Well, I mean, there was, you know, again, the borrowing scheme with the beverage container recycling fund, and I also want to say both the Assembly and Senate Democrats have proposed an oil severance tax. To tax oil as it comes out of the ground, which of course will increase gas prices.
Are they taxing the Gulf? Are they taxing the Gulf down there right now? Are they trying to make money off that? Just kidding. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I mean, the oil severance tax would drastically hurt,
domestically produced oil, huh, David?
Domestically and in-state oil producers.
Yeah.
You know what's left of them here in California. Because that's who this tax would apply to, and it's going to hurt the economy. It's going to increase our 12.5% unemployment rate, which is the highest that it's ever been. And they want to use the money to fund public sector jobs. They want to use the money to fund public safety and education and teachers and jobs like that. And, Doug, that's all well and good, I suppose, but the problem is there's 2.3 million unemployed private sector workers, the majority of whom have been out of work for over 6 months, and they need help.
We're at a break point right now here, so hold that thought, and we'll be right back with you, David. David Wolth, Howard Jarvis Tax Rate Association.
605-456.
Try that again. 605-4567 here on KCNR is the number to call in. We got just a few minutes before we get to the top of the hour. It is 79 degrees in Reading on KCNR, clearly News Talk Radio.
Homeland is coming.
8:55, 5 minutes in front of 9 o'clock on KCNR, clearly News Talk Radio. It is 81 degrees already, and the high today will be near 91. South winds about 10 to 13 miles an hour. Low tonight around 64. The weather always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Carl and Linda Bott, if you're just joining us, are out of town. They're down in Sacramento. Carl being honored as the North State Veteran of the Year. Heard from him a short time ago as they were entering the Capitol building. We didn't get a chance to get him on the air, but we know that everyone here in Reading certainly wishes Carl and Linda well as Carl receives this honor. Our guest host this morning is no stranger to Sacramento, and it is Mr. Doug LaMalfa.
Thank you. David Wolth is with us here from the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association. Now, the idea is being kicked around once again perennially, it seems to be, trying to do an end run by the majority in the legislature on the two-thirds vote, something that's been very hard fought for by Howard Jarvis and many others to preserve the two-thirds vote on passing the state budget as well as tax increases. And in this present package, they seem to think they're going to somehow get these fee increases and other maneuvers through on a simple majority, in violation of the law and of the Constitution. Tell us a little bit about that, David.
Sure, Doug. Yeah, what Senate Dems are trying to do, they're proposing a realignment of various state services down to the local level and trying to use that swap of sorts as a justification to attempt to pass either sales or oil severance taxes in order to fund that shift by way of a majority vote. And we do believe that is in violation of Prop 13.
Okay.
We do believe, of course, tax increases to provide revenue do require a two-thirds vote of the legislature. And should that plan be implemented, I would imagine we would be exploring our options in terms of what to do. And, Doug, I mean, I know time is short, so you brought up borrowing before the break, and this is, I guess, just the final point I want to make in the minute or so we have left. The point of living within our means. You know, we're going to have an $88 billion budget this year, more revenue received by California than any other state in the union. There is a fundamental disconnect in terms of how to solve the economic problem the state faces. They're imposing new taxes, they're doing all this stuff. What they're not doing is providing new private sector jobs to deal with the highest unemployment rate in our history. Listen, NUMMI's gone, Northrop Grumman is gone. We've lost 650,000 manufacturing jobs this decade. The core of our economy has disappeared. And the only way you bring those jobs back is to lower the taxes and economic regulations.
That are choking us, David, like AB 32, this global warming nonsense, and the California Air Resources Board. I mean, the state can't be setting prices or causing income, but it can certainly step out of the way and allow jobs and the economy to flourish, and those things kill that. I wholeheartedly agree.
Right.
Sir, we're up against the time here, so we have one caller that wants to ask a question, so I appreciate you wrapping up with us and giving us a glimpse of that view down there. So thanks a lot for being with us, David.
Okay, sounds good, Doug. Have a good day, sir.
Okay. Carl, you're here with a question.
Oh, hey, Doug.
Oh, this is our Carl.
Linda here.
Hey, Carl, buddy.
You know, thanks for letting us be on our show.
Doug's a popular guy.
Yeah, well, we haven't torched the place yet here, so you should have something to come back to tomorrow. So thanks for letting me sit in. You guys having fun down there?
Well, yeah, we're getting ready to go into the assembly here and take a tour.
Watch your wallet. Watch your wallet, you guys. Watch your purse, Linda. So,
thanks a lot for being on today. You know, tomorrow we got Mark Beecham's going to have Sheriff Basenko, Chief Hanson, and Silas Lyons, the editor of the Record Searchlight, are going to be on trying to shore up the place until we get back on Friday.
Cool. All right. Well,
we appreciate you being on there, Doug.
Hey, we're having a ball here, so thanks for letting me sit in today.
Congratulations again, Carl.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You have fun.
Hey, Bob?
Yes, sir.
Take care of Doug.
Will do. We're feeding him plenty of coffee. Take care.
All right. Thanks.
And that's about going to wrap it up. Doug, any final thoughts in our last few seconds here as we get ready to hit the top of the hour?
Oh, we'll be on the road here. We got an election in November, but just a lot of things to do in Northern California. So thanks for having me on today.
All right, thank you. Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. This is KCNR Shasta Redding. See you tomorrow.